to A Global Focus. This evening's program features Corina Sables, author of The Collectors, A Canadian UFO Experience. Focus with its program website, aglobalfocus.com. This evening's guest is Corina Sables. A Global Focus is broadcast live on the International Paranormal Radio Network with anchor station UPRN 105.7 FM New Orleans and also several listening venues noted at the UFOParanormalRadio.com webpage. Thanks to Joe Montaldo for making these shows possible and the network. And I wish a very happy Veterans Day to our veterans and active duty servicemen and women and to their families. Tonight's program features Corina Sables, author of The Collectors, A Canadian UFO Experience. Corina, who resides in the Canadian province of British Columbia, has lectured in Canada and the United States. Corina's media credits include The Vike Report radio show on the Inner Streams Network, The Jeff Rentz Program, Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country, a documentary for the Creepy Canada television series, and the Montel Williams show, and actually, on I want to give you an even more interesting documentary that was heard throughout Canada and I believe the world. What was the name of that, Corina? It was Abductee Speak Out. Yes, please tell me.
Yes, it was Intruders, Abductee Speak Out.
Yes, and that received tremendous coverage and interest. Now, let me see. And I also mentioned that she's appeared on the Montel Williams Show and numerous other radio programs. And also, Ronnie McMullen, he's also a veteran. Ronnie McMullen's UFO Live Encounters radio program, a very popular one on the internet radio scene. Now, Corina, you also run a paranormal support group for those individuals wishing to discuss their unusual experiences. And Corina Sables' website can be found at www.thecollectorsonline.com. Corina, pardon that confusion. We're thrilled to have you as a guest this evening. I've read your book, and I found it very compelling and very informative read.
Oh, thank you. It wasn't meant to really be a book, actually. It was, I guess, over the years, I've just kept a diary of things that were going on. And in 2003, I had an experience that frightened me so much that I was basically incapable of functioning properly for about a year. The fear just totally paralyzed me. And then finally, through some counseling, I just decided to make the fear work for me and decided to write a book about the experiences so that it would help other people like myself.
Yes, indeed. And I believe that you might be referencing, is it the July 31st, 2000 event in, is it Kelowna, British Columbia, where you and another observer did view craft, UFO craft, in close proximity to your car, also some entities, and unfortunately one of the craft followed you, you people home to your residence. That would definitely be a very traumatic occurrence.
It was July the 31st, 2003, and it was a girl come up from Vancouver, and she decided she wanted to go stargazing the night before she left. And to make a long story short, we did go out to an area, and there was no moon that night, and there were no street lights or anything, or our house was close by where we were at the time. And we arrived there about 5 after midnight. She got out of the vehicle right away with some binoculars, and I got out of the vehicle with a 1.5 million candlelight just to check for cougars and bears in that area because we were out a little bit out of the city. And it was instant. You know, she just said, you know, there's three stars in a triangular formation up here. And she said, they're moving in a zigzagging formation. She said, you know, stars, planes don't do that. What's going on? And then she said, right off the bat, she said, wait a minute, it just changed. And I said, well, what do you mean it changed? And she said, well, the three stars kind of came together and imploded into one, and then it turned into this neon green-looking object. And that's when everything inside of me told me that something wasn't right, something was wrong. And I turned on my light across the road from us, on the left-hand side of the road, about 40 feet in front of us. And there were actually five beings standing there.
That's really going to be a very traumatic sight. And I just wanted to note here as well, Corinna, that reports came into the HBCC UFO Research Group, I believe in your local area, as to other witnesses calling into them and reporting seeing these bright green in the area. Now, I'm quoting here from the report, quote, from Brian Veit, the director, quote, this witness tells me that the light was very low in the sky and traveled in a straight line for a short distance, then made a slight change in direction heading to the north, end quote. And, of course, that report does continue. Yes.
Well, according to Brian Veit, who was up in Houston up north here, north in B.C., he did say that quite a few eyewitnesses did contact him. I believe it was a dozen of them contacted him. And, and told him of certain things that they had seen that, you know, totally coincided with what we had seen and what happened in the area that we were, unbeknownst to us. So there were, you know, we had not just the eyewitnesses, but the next day we also had signs on our bodies that were telling us that something terrible happened. We had bruises. We had burn marks on our bodies. You know, we both felt very ill and had bleeding noses, lost a lot of hair over the next few months, and I was actually hospitalized for a week by December. I was so ill.
Yes, you go into great details there about some of the horrific after effects that can occur after having an encounter with these beings. And, you know, Corinna, too, I want to mention for further very strong confirmation of your observing these crafts. You've seen crafts of different types, correct? And one incident in your book recalls the arrival over your home at night of a very large boomerang-shaped craft. And now that sighting was confirmed by a UFO field investigator from Vancouver, the Vancouver branch of UFOBC Group. And I guess their group received calls from 16 individuals in the Vancouver area that they had seen a large boomerang-shaped craft.
Yes, that's right. That's, the children and I were living in Aldergrove at the time, which is about an hour and a half out of Vancouver in the valley there, in the Fraser Valley. And one night I was just out having tea with a friend outside in my back patio. It was probably about, you know, between 10 and 11 p.m. There was, again, no moon that night, but just a sky full of stars, in other words. And all of a sudden I just felt this strange humming inside of myself, and he looked at me, and this is a man who was very scientific and didn't quite, you know, believe in things like that. I never discussed anything like that with him at the time. And he said, I feel something. He said, I'm not sure what's going on, but I don't like this feeling I have. And I said, I think I know what it is. And we both looked up in the sky. And very slowly, it started approaching, and then it stopped just in line from where we were sitting. And this boomerang-shaped ship was so large that it took up most of the sky. It was probably over a football field large. It was so low to the ground that it actually made me feel claustrophobic. And at that point, when it stopped, my friend just looked at me and he said, that's it, Karina, I can't stand this. I'm going inside. You have to come with me. And I said, no. I said, if it stopped there, it has to do with me. And I said, I don't want to know once and for all what these are, what's going on here. So I just stood outside for what I thought was 2 or 3 minutes. And all of a sudden, it just left. It was there, and then it wasn't. And then I went back inside, and he was in a real panic. He was just, you know, beside himself. Where the hell have you been? I've been all over the place looking for you. I went outside. I went everywhere. You weren't there. Where did you go? And I said, well, I didn't go anywhere. I said, I was standing there, you know, maybe, what, 3 minutes? What's wrong with you? And he said, no, you don't understand. He said, look at the clock. You've been gone over 45 minutes. So that was that particular night. that was a boomerang-shaped ship. But there's been others through my life, like when I was 10 years old, my brother and I being in a park in the middle of the day, nice sunny day, lots of people there, the same thing. All of a sudden, this strange humming feeling in our abdomens. I said, "Do you feel that?" He said, "Yes." And then he turned and he said, "Saw those people, why are they all pointing up to the sky above us like that?" So we looked up, and there was your typical flying saucer, except it was still, but it was right above us. And this was like during daylight hours. I mean, a lot of people saw this thing.
Definite observation. And, you know, back to that other incident with the huge boomerang-shaped craft, apparently you were alerted the next morning by neighbors who were very upset that there were as many as four helicopters, four black helicopters were flying low around your complex there, and your neighbors so advised you.
I can't remember if it was three or four of them, but I know that there were several black helicopters with blacked-out windows. Who flew above our complex. And, you know, my neighbor came knocking at my door and said, "You know, there's something really weird going on here." But she said, "I have to tell you, it's ever since you moved in here." She said, "We've seen strange lights here at night. We've, you know, now these helicopters." She said, "What the hell's going on?" So it wasn't the first time, you know, we've had this happen to us before, like, in the Okanagan Valley where we live now in Peachland area a few years back. We had a bad experience through the night, and the next morning I actually contacted my neighbor that night and said, "Something's probably going to happen through the night." And I said, "I think I'm going to help tomorrow morning, so can you please be there?" And he said, "Yes, no problem." He said, "Can you talk about it?" I said, "No, not right now. We'll tell you tomorrow." And the next morning, sure enough, here's the black helicopters, three of them, flying at rooftop level. I mean, he was so low that my nightie and hair were flying up in the air. And it was totally black, all three of them, and all three of them had blacked out windows. I have no idea who they are, what this is about, but I know that my children and I fear them as much as we fear the visitors. I don't know what it is. I don't know who they are. I don't know if it's military. I don't know what it is, but it does scare us.
That would sound very traumatic. Now, Corinna, in your book, The Collectors, A Canadian UFO Experience, you detail your family's visitation by alien entities whose intrusions, harassment, and procedures can only be described as horrific. Now, your family has dealt with these encounters for more than one generation, and of course, in abduction research, the multi-generational experience scenario is appearing in the research findings. You felt compelled to write this book. More details on the ongoing presence your family has had to deal with?
Well, you know, it does begin, you know, at a very, very young age for us. For my children and I, and my grandchildren earlier, it's between the ages of 3 and 5 years old. What I've discovered is that, for sure now I'm convinced that it was on my mother's side for the last few generations. My mother died at a very young age, at the age of 30, very suddenly. She went very quickly, and the doctors could not explain or identify what the problem was, what was wrong with her. She was running very, very high fevers. Her blood work was off the charts. And it was after they had gone down to the U.S. for a holiday. They were only there one night, and it was so hot that they decided to go back to the hotel and just go to bed with just a sheet over them at that point because it was so warm. And my father woke up early in the morning with my mom back facing him, and what he first noticed was that she had these strange, like, huge, circular, burn-looking mark on her body, on her back. It looked like an octopus had been at her back or something. Anyways, when he touched her, he felt how hot she was. He woke her and he said, "Honey, are you okay?" And she said, "I don't feel very good. We need to go home. Something's wrong." So they got home, she was put in the hospital, and she never came out.
And that'll be so tragic for your family.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't very easy, but, you know, it was, I think when it really hit me and became very, very personal is when they started with my children, and then my three-year-old grandson had something happen when he was only a few months old. So those things are really terrifying, but also there's a helplessness because there's nothing you can do. I mean, you want to be there for your children. You want to protect them, but, you know, there's nothing you can do to stop them. They come and take whatever they want, whenever they want, you know, without asking and worrying about how you feel because they have no emotions.
Yes, you know, even you note in your book that, for example, you describe your, I believe it was your first encounter as a young child, you were very little. You saw a small face in the window at the same time as a very bright white, bluish light fell upon the your bedroom floor. And you ran to your parents, but they were in almost a catatonic state, as though forced upon them. Very unusual state for them. And you know, many researchers have noticed that during an abduction, the entities put the partner or other family members in the household in such a deep state of slumber or really can't respond to the cries of the abductee.
Yes, very much like that. It will usually begin, if it's at nighttime, it will usually begin in the bedroom. You see a light, bright, bluish white light that will come through the bedroom window. The next thing you know, there's something standing at the foot of your bed. Quite often, if it was during the day or sometimes at night, when I've been with other people, they either were involved as well, or simply put, they were put in a trance-like state and never remembered a thing the next day.
Yes, that's really a profound sense there of some type of mental manipulation. Now, you know, Corinne, you also mentioned in your book, in several scenarios, the changes in the outside environment that can occur at the onset of an abduction. If I remember correctly, you note that sometimes at the approach of a craft, the reaction of animals in the area can be extreme, such as very loud barking or restlessness from such animals as dogs, coyotes, and others. And then as the actual craft approaches, the environment experiences a complete lack of sound. And, you know, Corinna, researchers have noted this. I remember about 2 years ago, in an interview, Don Ledger mentioned a report he had received when individuals told him of experiencing a giant triangle flying over their home. It was as though they were in an environment void of sound. It was very remarkable.
Much so. Every experience that we've had, it's the same thing. First of all, I don't know if other people have mentioned this or not, but with my children and I, what usually occurs is before they come or when they come around, we get this very high-pitched sound in our ears, which is so loud it can actually be quite painful. And I can be living 5 hours away from my son or daughter, and, you know, they'll phone me and they'll say, "Mom, did you hear that?" And I'll say, "Yes, I did. It wasn't just, you know, your ears doing funny things. I said, I heard it as well." So that's the first thing. And then, of course, the other is, like, when my girlfriend and I in 2003 were out there, it was very, very hot that summer. And we had, 2003 was the year that we had all our forest fires. It was like literally being in hell. It was just horrific around here. And so it was quite hot. There was all this going on. And all of a sudden, I mean, within 2 minutes, the air went very cold and musty smelling, and she turned around and she said, "Wow, did you just feel that?" I said, "Yes, it's gone very cold and it smells funny, musty smelling." And then at that point, the coyotes just went crazy, and it was as if hundreds of them were surrounding us. It was coming from everywhere, close up. And then within a few seconds, a minute, I don't know how long it could have been, everything went dead quiet. You could not hear a cricket. You couldn't hear a coyote. There was nothing quiet. So it's not unusual. We've experienced this quite a bit.
It sounds like there are tremendous environmental changes there. And that's a real phenomenon. Now, you know, Corinna, I was really quite moved by your accounts as an experiencer as a young child. I remember that there's one account or chapter where you describe being very young yourself and yet attempting to help a very young abductee, a young girl like yourself, by handing her your beloved toy, a stuffed kitty cat, during it must have been rather a major abduction with several children on board.
Yes, I do very vividly remember this this stuffed animal, and you know, telling my father that I really missed it and I wanted it back, and then eventually realizing that I had given it to another child to comfort them, and that I probably would never see this stuffed animal again.
Well, you're a very nice lady, and to me, you present it as being a very strong empath, someone who feels great empathy towards others. And if I remember correctly, ICAR Research, Joe, has mentioned that contactees, many of them are empaths, if not all of them. It's a wonderful trait. Now, you know, too, Corinna, you make very strong points there as you describe your accounts and the experiences of your children. And that is, how does a child in what should be the most wonderful, almost magical part of their lives, deal with the intrusive violation of these beings, whose strength and that of your children is remarkable?
Well, thank you. It's made us much stronger, yes, in a way, but I have to tell you, I didn't always feel so strong. And there were times, as strong as I am and as optimistic and positive as I am, there were definitely times years ago when the children were small that I didn't feel like I wanted to be here anymore, because I didn't feel like I could do anything to help my children. And that was a horrible feeling.
I guess just how important your support of your children has been to them, and also to the support group that you formed, and also to researchers and experiencers. And just to be transparent here, I too am one. My first experience that I recall was when I was 5. Fortunately, I don't have much recall, but I find your work extremely helpful, as I'm sure many are, so finding it in the room and also on the internet and on the listeners from hearing the FM station. Now, let's see. Corinna, let me see here. You mentioned as a very young child seeing during one of your abductions what we might now describe as a young hybrid infant. That event produced a very powerful impact on you. Corinna, you noted several points in your book, your concerns over the aliens and their purpose in developing a hybrid program.
Well, for years now, my daughter as well, we've all been shown what we call these little hybrids, and they're half us and half them, I believe, which when we're taken aboard a ship, we see them in these kind of, for lack of a better word, like an aquarium, like a tube-like thing, and these little fetuses are floating in this liquid. I remember being very, very young and taken aboard, and I was being put on a very cold stainless steel, what looked like stainless steel table. And the weird part about this table is that it had no legs. It just seemed to float like that above the floor. Anyways, I was sitting on there, and the next thing I know, there was this infant, a hybrid, I think, that was laid out on a table in front of me. And I had very mixed emotions. First of all, my first thought was, oh my goodness, because this baby hardly moved and it didn't make any sounds. It looked like it was dying. So my first thought was, I have to help this baby. I need to hold this baby. But when I looked very closely, it terrified me because it was so different looking. It had a large pear-shaped head. It had a very thin, scrawny little body, tiny lips for a mouth, but it had eyes, but not quite like the grays. The eyes were big, but they looked like they had a pupil like we have. So it was quite different, and it terrified me, but at the same time, I felt very sorry for this little being.
Very, very intriguing there. Now, you know, Corinna, two very interesting accounts in your book. One is during an abduction. You remember being in a very large ship and in a very large circular room and viewing hundreds of incubators. Also, there was an interesting experience when you were on another craft, a tall white being was telling you not to touch this huge structure. It was a central column in the craft. There were drawers in that central column, and he told you that in those drawers was being stored the essence of man. I hope I'm correctly remembering this. Yes. What is your understanding of that entity's use of the term essence of man? Boy, it sounds enigmatic, but it also sounds a little bit frightening.
Well, I have to tell you, it did scare me to death, and I still have nightmares about it because I still don't really truly understand the meaning of what he said. There were two greys there and myself, but this taller one was, he called himself the doctor, and he had a more bony structure to his head and facial area. He was the one who telepathically told me I was not allowed to see. I wouldn't be allowed to see. Eventually, as I wrote in my book, I did touch the column, and this drawer, long drawer, for lack of a better word, came out with this gush of air, compressed air, and I asked him again. I said, I need to know what's in there. You need to tell me because you don't know me very well, but I'm curious, George, and I will find out. I will remember this. And he just simply said, it is the essence of man. And that terrified me. I thought, well, are they ripping us of our soul, our spirit? Is it DNA? Is it the sperm, our eggs? What is it? What do they mean by the essence of man? So to this day, to be quite honest with you, I don't know what they meant by the essence of man, but I know it didn't sit right with me. It didn't feel right.
Thank you. I found that very, very interesting, as I do your entire book, actually. Now, Corinna, I also note that throughout your life, you found that some relationships, some of your dealings with others, their tenure or just their focus could change quickly and thoroughly. I, too, have sometimes found this. Now, you felt that the beings could have played a part in causing discord in relationships, perhaps?
There's definitely times that when someone comes into your life, whether it's a friend or someone of a romantic nature, you will find that it seems they're quickly around them. They come and I guess try to find out who they are, how they work, things like that. And definitely. I know it sounds, but I think that they do affect our relationships. Absolutely.
Thank you. That's very interesting. And I have two questions now from our Wisconsin ICAR director. Very good questions. Vale is wondering, Corinna noted this feeling she gets before a visit will occur. Corinna, did you get this feeling in the apartment when Linda suggested that you go out stargazing that evening? And if so, how long did the feeling last? Was it present the next morning after the event?
Which feeling are they talking about?
I'm guessing it's that one where the friend, the daughter of your friend, suggested that before she leaves the city, she was staying with you as a favor, that you were doing a favor to her mother because the little girl was moving to the city, or the young person was moving to the city to find a job there.
That's right.
Before she was returning home to her mother to tell her about getting the job and how she liked the city, she suggested that you go stargazing. And according to the report, that was the event July 31st, 2003 that was so remarkable, particularly remarkable.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, I just thought it was kind of strange that all of a sudden, so late at night, she would just come up quickly like that and say, let's go stargazing. I thought, well, that's kind of strange. I said, it's really late. I said, why don't you wait till the next time you're in town? She said, no, let's go out tonight. She says, it seems nice outside. Let's just go. So to make the long story short, I just gave into it and said, okay, let's go. But I had no feelings that there was anything wrong at first. It was as we got out of the vehicle and that the air changed and she told me what she saw, then I knew, oh my goodness, okay, we're in trouble here.
Excellent. Thank you for that information. And Tal does have a second question, Karina. Karina, can you relate the situations that led up to witnessing the owl entities in or within the mysterious fog that appears around them? And can I ask a second question that I immediately think of here? One occasion in my life alone, I've seen illuminated, or it seemed as though it were illuminated fog. Have you ever seen illuminated fog? And back to Tal's question, can you relate the situations that led up to witnessing the owl entities in or within the mysterious fog that appears around them?
It wasn't a luminous, per se, fog. It's more like, it's a little bit like a fog, but it's like one of those machines that makes the fog-like stuff. And what we were just leaving this one particular experience, my children were with us and I was with a friend, and we were just leaving an area. We had gone stargazing, and he's an astronomer, so the kids were looking through the telescope and stuff like that. And just as we left, I had a very strange feeling. I said, it's time to go home. I said, I really want to go home. Excuse me. So we started leaving. I was driving, and the children were in the back. He was sitting beside me. And all of a sudden, I just slammed on the brakes, and I said, oh, my God. I said, look what's out there. And it was kind of a little bit of fog, not too much, but it was around an area where there was this boulder, and on top of this boulder stood this gray. And I couldn't believe it, because the person that was with me said, what do you mean gray? It's just a tall gray owl. And the kids started going, are you kidding me? Come on, look what it is. It's not an owl. And so on and so forth. So that wasn't the first time. We've had, you know, several other times where we have witnessed owls that do strange things. And then on another occasion, we were driving home at night, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the road — this is a country road — so in the middle of the road, in front of the headlights, we see this owl. Now, I know owls don't lie down, and this owl was laying down across the road. And as soon as we said owl, this thing stood up and kind of floated away. So I'm not sure to this day, you know, if it's really an owl or if it's something else.
That's very intriguing information. Now, you know, Karina, I also find it interesting that at times you found that the physical symptoms that can occur at the approach of these beings or craft can include a very strong electrical current type of effect that courses through the body.
Well, on one particular occasion, I'll tell you one that it brought up something for me was during the night. One time I was just about asleep, I heard one of my children screaming, and they were at the other end of the house. And I remember jumping out of bed and running through the hallway to their bedroom. And as I did that, it was as if I'd walked through a wall of electricity. Every hair on my body stood up. I felt like I was electrified. So that kind of feeling has happened to all of us several times before. And it's usually when they're around, definitely.
Thank you for that answer, for that information. You know, Karina, too, you noted also that for years, sometimes you will affect electrical appliances in unusual ways. Of course, this has been reported in a lot of the researcher material as well, that many experiencers do, unfortunately, have sometimes negative effects on electrical appliances, causing them to malfunction or not operate at all. Also, problems with watches. Now, I really like the account where you met Graham Conway, the UFOBC researcher, for the first time, and boy, you were manifesting quite a few electrical anomalies just going to the restaurant.
Yeah, it was the first time actually that we met. We've spoken on the telephone before, but we had never met yet. And he said, "Well, let's meet in Langley at, you know, the McDonald's there or something." So I said, "Okay, sure." And it was just starting to get dark, I believe, or something. It was later on in the afternoon. And the first thing that happened, of course, the security light on and off, and he just laughed. I came out of my vehicle, and my alarm on the car went off or something. And he said, "Wow, you sure know how to make an entrance." And I said, "Wait until you see my exit." Well, he was rewarding thing, because as I left, Everything just went crazy with the lights again, and he was just laughing. He couldn't get over this. He said, this is incredible. He said, I've heard of this before, but I've rarely, you know, been witness to seeing it like this. So, but, you know, I mean, to this day, I go into stores, and I will shut down their computer. All of a sudden, they, you know, they're punching things, and nothing's working. I can't wear watches because they just don't work on me. So I remember, actually, not long ago, I did a lecture not far from here in Canada, and they had taken this videotape, and they said, do you mind if we tape you? And I said, no, not at all. But I said, be warned that, you know, it may not work. And I said, oh, no, this is a new camera, new film. We're all set. We've done this before, no problem. And, you know, 2 hours later, they went to look at it. It was nothing but snow. There was nothing on it. So it's not unusual.
Yeah, the anomalies, yes, and of course they are noted in the research. Now, you know, Karina, do you believe that the beings whom you have seen are primarily grays?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And also, have you found that any of the smaller grays appear more like android-type beings? Some of them.
Well, you know, for the most part, most of them, they almost look like, they behave like robots. You know, it's like they have no emotions, no feelings. They come and do what they need to do, and then they just leave. So for the most part, I would say, yeah, they're almost like little robots. I mean, I know they're not robots.
Combination, perhaps, of both the interesting. Well, some people, too, wonder if perhaps some of the very smaller grays might be a combination of both a biological unit and also a cybernetic one. So that's interesting. I hope I correctly described that. But just it's one possible concept now that's being thrown out there. And we have another question coming in now. Despite the fact that I had to replace my mic, and I'm not right now in the Paranormal Radio Network room. I'll be returning right at the break for questions. One of our great researchers here, Rydell, has a question for you, Karina. She's wondering if you've undergone hypnosis yet. In the book, Rydell said that she thought you noted you were considering it, but had not yet undergone hypnosis. And this is for the return of memories. And also, do you think you have implants? And if so, would these be of human or alien origin?
I have considered hypnosis definitely, because there's some things about, like, for instance, in 2003 that I would like to try and remember. But at the same time, I kind of am pulling towards maybe not doing it, because everything I remember because I've remembered on my own, not through the practice of hypnosis. And I found that a lot of skeptics will say, well, you know, we don't believe in hypnosis. They planted memories. So I thought, better not do it for now, but I can on my own. What I remember is what I remember. And then maybe later on in my life, I would like to try and see if I could have someone work with me. But I would definitely choose somebody that had experience with abductees, and that was legit. You know, it wouldn't just be just anybody, for sure.
That's a very well-considered response. Now, Karina, and I believe your family also, your children as well, you turn to these beings as collectors. It does seem very appropriate when reading your book, as far as your accounts, they're very powerful. They're troubling as to what the beings perpetrated. Now, could you describe to us why you're the collectors?
I call them the collectors because that's what they've come to do our whole lives. They've come to collect our blood, our DNA, pieces of our skin, pieces of our hair. I remember one time waking up with a chunk of hair missing from my head. I had no idea. I thought, did the children do this during the night or what's going on? So for all of us, it's been collecting this, collecting that. And you think after all these years, they'd have everything they want. But I think what's going on is I believe they come early in life, and I believe that they will go throughout your whole life. It's almost like some of our scientists who go into the Amazon forest and find a new animal or something. Well, they put him out, they tag him, they pull out a tooth, they take some blood, and then they follow him for the rest of his life to see what the pattern is, what they do, what they eat, and so on. So I think possibly that may be what's happening here. I'm not sure.
Sounds very plausible. Very, very plausible. Now, you know, Karina, reading, it was very apparent that you're a wonderful mother. Your first concern is for your children. You relate how sorrowful it was for you to hear from them their accounts with the visitors. And also, I was very moved by the letters that your children wrote to you. For example, when your young son in a later, I guess, teenage years, decided to move to live with his father. He wrote in the letter, in retrospect, that a wonderful mother. And he loved living with you. He loved being a child in your household. I'm paraphrasing. You're a wonderful, wonderful mother. But he could not stand the visits by the aunties. They were so disruptive and just so alarming when they occurred. I'm paraphrasing here.
That's probably the hardest thing for me. And I'm sorry, I didn't think it would affect me this way, but it has.
Let me ask another question. And let me see, we've got about 8 minutes. Let me also let you know just how much your information is helping so many people here, including me, and I'm sure very many on the network and in the room. Now, I would like to, because I know when we return at about 6 minutes after the hour, that I'll probably have about 10 or 12 questions for our room researchers. But, Karina, I will be discussing some of the procedures, the facts that, the series, the marks that suggested to doctors who were in amazement that perhaps radiation was connected with the marks, quite a few really negative aspects here of the procedures that the beings were conducting. I'd like to ask two questions here, and because I know what your answer is going to be, but I think it's important that they be said, and before the break is a great time. Karina, would you say that these beings are performing their procedures solely for their benefit and for their own agenda?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry, but that is my answer.
Uh-huh. Also, Karina, would you say that these beings acted intentionally, and that you would describe their conduct as outrageous in normal human standards, and that their conduct, particularly their procedures, would cause severe emotional distress and be the causal effect of severe physical after effects?
Well, I think what some people don't understand is that when you go through some of these experiences and stuff, and especially the children, it doesn't just affect the physical part of the human being. You know, it will affect spirit, our mind, our everything. And so spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and physically, you're hit from all sides. And every time they come and do some of these certain procedures, it's not just like somebody coming and giving you a shot in the arm like a doctor would. This is something like having your mind and your body raped over and over again. I'm not sure that some people quite understand that.
Absolutely. And, you know, Karina, I believe that you would feel, or I shouldn't, because I'll just say I feel, that the behavior, that such behavior, such procedures represent violations of human freedoms, including the right to liberty and security of person.
Absolutely. You're bang on, and I feel the same way. Yet, you know, having said this, this is so vast. Come on, let's not kid ourselves. There are many, many different types of races out there. And like us human beings, I believe that there are some very gentle, kind, loving ones, but there's also the nasty side of it, where there's some that just don't care how much pain they cause you, or even if you die, they don't care what they do to you.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, I am researching if there may be a full spectrum of beings. It would make sense that there would be, that the creator or first source would create a full panoply of beings in the universe, or multi-universes, or multiverses, I guess, as they say, they describe it now, or some do. For example, I'm researching, and so are many others, the reports of a race, the tall whites. Now, they're allegedly a species very different to the grays. Now, a primary authority on these, or a primary reporter on the tall whites, is Charles Hall, a very credible eyewitness, very responsible position, and great success in his life, a leader in intellect and just many other fine traits. But now, Charles Hall, from his accounts and his work, his Millennial Hospitality, portrays a race of tall whites who are neutral and who do take pride in fulfilling their agreements. Justo, and I don't want to ramble here, they present the option of a race that is one perhaps one would consider as a counterpart to the grays. And we're research on this matter, and I agree with you, the full spectrum could very well be the case, and pardon my rambling.
Oh, no problem. No, I mean, I've never personally met any other ones, like the grays, the reptilians, any of those. I've never met any of them. What's been dealing with us are the grays. However, one time we did see something that looked like a giant praying mantis for the, and that one was extremely scary. That was just terrifying, that one.
You know, I've heard a fellow researcher say that as well, of seeing a praying mantis. You didn't get a good feeling from the praying mantis type?
Oh, no, not at all. Mm-hmm. No. Actually, this one terrified me more than the grays do, so. Mm-hmm. But there's very little memory of it, just seeing it, right? You know, being laying on a table and having it stand beside me. It was just, it was yuck. I just don't even want to think about that.
That would be very traumatic. And you know, Corinna, what I think is interesting, just as another reference to the tall whites, Charles Hall has said on a number of occasions that the grays represent a natural enemy to the tall whites. And Charles is, I've asked Charles and also Mrs. Hall what they think of the tall grays. And I guess Charles very much appreciated his experiences with the tall whites. However, Charles Hall has said that he never wants to meet a gray, and he can't say anything more. I'm paraphrasing, but it's a very close paraphrase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they tend to give you that. You can be screaming. You can be a child and screaming from pain and wanting your mother or whatever. There's no reaction. There's no emotion. There's no love. There's nothing there. Nothing. They simply don't care.
And also, Corinna, do you ever get have they ever telepathically said to you that they're researching emotions or anything like that?
No, not researching emotions and things like that. They have tried to put types of, it's like a screen memory or things like that into me, but nothing that had to do with any of that, no.
Well, you know, from your being able to recall those flashbacks, even at the age of six, it suggests to me not only the frequency of the visitations, but you must have a very strong mind as well, Corinna, a very brave heart, a brave heart there for certain, and a very bright lady as well, you and your family. We have another question, I think, coming in from the... No, we just have 1 minute left to our six-minute break. During intermission, I suggest to everyone that they check out Corinna's excellent website, which is at thecollectorsonline.com, thecollectorsonline.com. And again, too, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that documentary, Intruders, Abductees Speak Out, and also hearing your past interviews on the several radio programs, including two excellent interviews here on UFO Undercover with Joe Montaldo. Everyone really appreciated those. Anyway, we'll be right back in 6 minutes, and... See you then. Bye-bye. And Clint, I'll be right back in 6 minutes as well. I think the intervening music and promotion should start now in about 30 seconds or less.
Okay, thank you, Patrice.
Thank you.
This is another song off of our album Tusk, and this is a song with Stevie Nicks. It's called Sarah.
Wait a minute, baby. Stay with me a while. Said you'd give me life, but you never told me about the fire. Thank you.
Welcome back to the second hour of Global Focus. Tonight's program features Karina Sables, author of The Collectors, A Canadian UFO Experience. Karina's website can be found at thecollectorsonline.com. Welcome back. And if you hear the printer, it's because I'm printing out the questions that our researchers and room visitors have for you. And, boy, I'm thrilled because many of them dovetail into questions that I had as well. And let me try to lower this volume. I am hearing an echo, and I know some of my friends in the room are saying that there's a bit of an echo for them as well. Now, Karina, first question is from a policeman, nicknamed Cop, in the Northeast area. Karina, what is the longest time you've been with the ETs? How long, for example, has the longest abduction encounter, per your recollections, been?
You mean how long were the missing time?
Yes.
Well, we've had anywhere from 45 minutes all the way up to three and a half hours.
Thank you. And now Cobb also wants to know, are these events still continuing?
I'm sorry, you're cutting in and out a little bit. I didn't quite hear you.
Absolutely. Let me speak right up. Karina, are these events still continuing?
Yes, they are. Not as often as they were, like, say, in my 20s and that, but definitely they're still happening.
Researcher, thank you for that response. Karina, another one of our senior researchers in knowledge, not in age, but a key researcher and also our West Virginia director, Joyce asks, what kind of effect, Karina, do you think all this has had on you physically, if any?
Sorry.
I noted you have some very strong points to make on this.
Well, physically, it does affect us in a lot of different ways. There are times that, you know, we would wake up, the children and I, and it would be in the middle of winter, and we'd have sunburnt faces or burns on the bottom of our feet or our hands. And, you know, try and explain that when you're going to work and stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous. There's other times we've woken up and we have strange smells on our hands and blood in our urine, all three of us, on the same day. You know, it affects you very, very much so on the physical. My blood work has been right off the charts. They don't know what's going on, what's causing it. They just, you know, they put me in the hospital. My potassium levels will crash suddenly out of nowhere for no reason at all. The liver enzymes are elevated. The white blood count's usually high. There's all kinds of different things going on. I remember one time waking up and they actually pulled a triangular black-looking thing out of my eye when I woke up in the morning. I'd been asleep all night. I don't know where it came from or what it was from, but I had a patch over my eye for 2 weeks for that one. So, you know, there's been different things. My daughter's also had an implant come out of her forehead, like between the two eyes above the nose area there at one time, you know, which left a little mark and was quite gross to her when it was coming out. The weirdest thing, this thing almost looked like, I don't know if you've ever seen a thin piece of selenite, which is a kind of crystal, and it was like a sharp little piece, and off of that were these strange looking veins, for lack of a better word. There were things sticking out of it. And, you know, so on a physical level, wow, I'm telling you, nonstop. It burns, it scratches. Something happened not long ago, and I actually put up the picture on my website, so if people wanted to go have a look at it, they can. It's, you know, waking up in the middle of the night and feeling like somebody's just cut you on the abdomen with a knife or something, and I looked down and it was still a bit bleeding, and it was quite a long and at one end of it a deep mark on my lower abdomen. Now, it's not my nails. I was wearing an ID. It's like, how in the world do things like that happen? You know, and then I mean, it's affected my jobs. I've lost jobs through the years. Some people always say, well, you know, you're just wanting some attention. You're wanting 5 minutes of fame. You want this, you want that. You know, got news for these people out there. You don't gain anything by coming forward or by doing this, saying things like that. You lose your friends. Some of your family members don't even look at you anymore. You lose jobs. Your health gets affected. Sometimes you end up in the hospital. The 2003 experience affected me on a physical level that has bugged me to this day. I want to know what they've done, because since that day, I've now been diagnosed with having small seizures. I've never had seizures in my life. So the fact that I'm having small seizures now, and I get these severe headaches, and now, you know, in the last year, they found what they think is a small brain tumor, the mid-central brain area. I had it looked at by a couple of doctors in the U.S., and they found that it was possibly a benign meningioma, but it's the size, to me, that could mean it's either an implant or something, because there's times that I get strange feelings up there under the skin and stuff. So I know it sounds crazy, but
One of our, and I'm jumping a question here, but I will not forget the other. One of our individuals here, again, that fine researcher Rydell, let me see here, mentioning implants. Now, you've mentioned them at least twice in the book, and a very powerful one being a very tiny looking implant. There was also another reference to a different implant, and let's see here. Also, Karina, I'm sorry, I'm reading off the question here. Let me see. The implant question, Rydell is wondering if you have more than one, a triangular scar or burn mark on your body, and let me see here. Also, she's wondering if you think that the aliens have done this, or also are you a bilab?
Well, I remember having triangular marks. My children and I all have had them, and they usually come, there's also a picture of that on my website. They usually come in a triangular formation, which shows you three puncture marks in a triangulation, and it's usually quite red. It can look infected or like a burn almost, and that usually appears on my neck, or when I was younger, it appeared behind my ear. Now, my grandson's had that one behind his ear as well already, the three-year-old, and both of my children have had those. I also have what people call now a scoop mark on my leg. It's on my calf muscle, and my brother has exactly the same one in the same spot, and we've had it since we were young children.
That's very interesting. Thank you for that response. Now, I also wanted to mention the incident where after a reported visit, your son had on his back a triangle with circles, and apparently the doctor who examined him believed that it perhaps entailed a radiation burn, and that the geometric markings could not have been made by any natural cause.
Yes, with that particular experience, he had come up from Vancouver and had only been here one night, and he woke up in the morning and he went to have a shower, and as he walked away, I looked at his back and I said, "What happened to you? What's going on?" He said, "I don't know, but my back kind of hurts this morning." And what it was a 4x4 by four triangular formation on his back, and it had little round radiation burn looking marks, and it went from 1, 1, 2 all the way down to 6 circles. And I just said, "Oh my God," I said, "you know, that's enough." I said, "You've only been here one night. What the hell do they want?" And I said, "Let's go to the doctor. We're going to have this documented and stuff, and we're going to take pictures. I'm fed up with this. We've got to prove what's going on here." So, you know, he wasn't a young child. He was 20-something. So, I mean, first of all, he sleeps on his stomach, not his back. So it's not something he would have been laying on. Number two, the outside the window of the room that he had been sleeping in that night, the brand new little green trees that had been planted and stuff not long before, and the grass in the orchard were all burnt. There was definitely, you could tell that something had been there, something had burnt the leaves off the tree and stuff. Then we went to the doctors, we took pictures, we went to the doctors, and I asked her, what do you think this is? And she says, well, I'm not quite sure. She said, I honestly have never seen a medical type of thing that would create something like this. So she said, you know, watch for vomiting, fevers, and put this cream, this ointment on it that I'm going to give you, put that on his back. And it was left at that. There was never really an explanation.
Yes, so some of these markings, some of these different after effects are not capable of explanation by these medical professionals, but they aren't willing to go to the next paradigm to think outside of the box as to what might be occurring.
Oh, my goodness, no. I think the first thing they would do with anything like that, they'd put me in the white jackets and put me away. That would be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to anyone,
that would be the result with anyone. And, you know, Corinna, when you mentioned that horrific circular hole in the spine, in the spinal area that your son had reported after one of the events, that really recalled to me some of the research of Jim Maroney, a health official from Canada and an author, who mentions in one of his books that the aliens could very much be interested in the human central nervous system.
Yes, I believe that too. This whole, you try and imagine, it's about the size of a pencil there, and you know, it's open, and you can see bone, you can see something white in there, but there's not an ounce of blood on the sheets or in his back. Now, how can that be? It was so done so precisely, but the pain was excruciating, and it was just horrible trying, you know, looking at him the way he was, and there was nothing that we could do, you know. It was put antibiotic cream on it, put this on it, you know, look for signs like vomiting or whatever, but they were never really sure either. There's never any real answers, logical answers for some of these things.
No, they aren't. Corinna, I just wanted to mention something to you, and that would be if you should in the future have questions about any geometrics or markings, I too, thank God, very rarely have encountered at times odd geometric patterns on my person. It's a very rare event. But about 2 years ago, I had found a marking in my leg that remained very painful, extremely painful. It wasn't a bruise. It was, however, geometric in form, very oddly geometric in form. And I'll let you, this, I think, is a great example of how there have been advances in this field. I was able to take pictures, and it was a sort of a joint collaboration with Daryl Sims and the Sabre team and ICAR with Linda and Joe Montaldo. I sent the pictures out to both Daryl Sims and Joe and Linda Montaldo. Daryl returned messages giving further information on the placement and type of scars that abductees should look for. Also, Joe and Linda were very supportive, and Joe had comments that were very helpful. So now at this time, the field is still developing that you can go to these organizations. And not only does ICAR have excellent researchers, but Daryl and his Sabre team have scientists and physicians, too, that are on board. So, thank God, the situation seems to be improving.
That's good, because we definitely need more of them.
I think so, too. Now, let's see here. Also, Corinna, we mentioned the roof. Oh, let me go to two questions that I forgot to ask. Another one coming in from Tal. Tal, where would you like to ask you, Corinna, where would you like to see this phenomenon go? Or how do you think, as a race, humans should handle it? What would you like eventually, Corinna? Just an opinion.
Well, like a lot of us, I think I would really like to see the government come forward with the truth and disclose all that they know, because they definitely have been involved for many, many years. And military and government, work hand in hand. There's things that I remember of being in an underground base. I remember it sounded to me like German speaking, German accents in white lab coats. There was a lab there. There were military people with dark skin. This underground base was huge. I mean, it had Hummers in there. It had trucks in there. So a lot of people. I just want them to see them come forward and tell us the truth. I'm really tired of this cat and mouse game and hiding the truth from people. I think a lot of us are a lot more ready for this and capable of handling the truth than they think. I think that they're afraid for us to find out the truth about all that they've lied to us about.
That would seem logical. Now, you know, I have another question here from one of our researchers, Eternal Being. And he wonders if you have any idea why these ETs have chosen you. Is there something special about you that would have made them select you for these visitations?
No. With the support group alone in the past, I had some of these people, you have nurses, you have fathers, you have priests, you have doctors. I mean, they come from all walks of life. You don't have to be a certain anything.
Considering the full spectrum of humans who are being impacted, I guess people would at this point say it's probably still a minority of the population, thank God, but that there's a full spectrum, and of course the details and the research on that is ongoing. Now, Corinna, to another factor, and this is just a general statement here, and that is in gynecological complaints suffered by female abductees. That's noted in the research material, and here I'd just like to know that Daryl and his team, Daryl has mentioned to me several research findings of theirs with cases. One I'm thinking of in, it might have happened in it might have happened in the West Coast. And they are observing the fact that these female abductees are complaining of unusual gynecological situations, and they're keeping informed of the situation.
Definitely. I've experienced stuff like that since I was about 13, 14 years old. One morning it could be waking up with blood in my belly button area and cleaning out the blood and finding that there was a puncture mark inside my belly button, to suffering with severe problems with ovarian cysts my whole life. Having endometriosis, having a flip, being told I was pregnant, and then 3 months later, apparently, all of a sudden, the baby was gone. There was nothing left. There was nothing there. A lot of problems. I've had at least 18 surgeries to the abdomen that had to do with that area.
Yes, and you know such complaints have been noted by many female abductees. And you know, Claire, I must say, despite your travails and the travails of your family that you've experienced in these reported incidents, you still have faith in your Creator. To me, that shows a very strong person, also very objective. And in a way, I think this oddly enough dovetails with the fact that you like to consider yourself an admirer of science and the scientific method, but what I'm trying to get at is you are still willing to believe that there is a loving Creator despite negative events, and you retain this open mind to research and get the answers on this phenomenon.
Absolutely. Well, I think what really sealed it for me is I had a near-death experience in 1989 while in surgery, and I tell you, that completely changed my whole life, and it made me realize that try not to be afraid, because we are not alone. And you know, when I was on the other side, mother, and understood that it's all about love and helping each other. So when these bad things started, you know, really getting worse and worse, I just decided that's it. You know, I've got to make these horrible experiences work for me, but also make it so that I'm going to be out there saying everything that I know, telling everything I know, and helping all kinds of people if I can. And that's what I want to keep on doing. I don't want to stop helping others.
You know, that's a wonderful objective, a wonderful focus for you to turn to. And you certainly are helping very many people. And, you know, Craig, I just wanted to inject here for our audience. We, too, at ITAR, have excellent researchers. And, you know, I think there's public-spirited, community-focused. Like Karina, though, I must say, Karina, you are exceptional. You're exceptional in just your strength of purpose, and you do have a brave heart. And those are wonderful traits. Now, okay, back to my rambling here. Now, I just wanted to let you know that we have excellent research going on at ICAR for abductees, also their families, and the general public. For example, we have an excellent book that has been written by one of our researchers, our ICAR State Director for Oregon, November Hansen, The Mosaic of the Extraterrestrial Experience, which can be downloaded at the ICAR site at www.icar1.com. At this time, November is writing a second book. It should be just as informative as the first, and definitely people should check this out. Now, Corinna, to your book, you mentioned that Graham Conway of UFOBC was the first field investigator to provide vital information to you and your family, that he was particularly helpful in acknowledging the existence of the alien presence scenario to you.
Yes, he was. He truly, he became like a father to me, and I miss him terribly. He passed away not long ago, and I just, you know, to this day, the first thing when something's happening, I seem to want to pick up the phone and call him and have to remind myself, you know, that he's gone. He was a tremendous help. He was a very kind man. He never once ever said, well, I think you're crazy, or, well, you know, I don't think it's that. He really, truly wanted to help people like ourselves. I remember one particular time a few years ago, I finally came forward with something that is not probably have, I don't know, I've never heard another abductee talk about some of the things that have happened with us, and I didn't even mention a couple of them in my book because I'm not sure how people are going to react. But I do remember when I was 17, something terrifying happened to me, and I ended up sharing this with him, and I'm telling you, he was so accepting. He was so kind and so helpful with this, and he said, you don't worry about anything. He said, I'm going to talk to a few people, because he says, I think another lady I spoke with went through something similar like this, and things like that. So, very kind man. I miss him dearly.
Well, you know, Corinna, I have a feeling, too, that he realized in your accounts or he recognized certain patterns in the events which you described. Patterns are important. I know ICAR, the International Committee for Alien Research, has discovered numerous abduction criteria, and Joe Montaldo makes a very strong point, and that being, well, it's actually several strong points, but in this case, it's that there is a certain percentage of patterns that do appear in the abduction event or experiencer event or contact. And the patterns that we found are also acknowledged by a majority of key researchers in the field. But now back to you, Corinna. I just want to note, too, as well, not only are there strong patterns in your accounts, but also your accounts reflect, as to everyone, I think you might agree with me, or maybe not, that each experiencer or an individual who encounters aliens will have a unique experience. Well, how can I say this? Okay, my view is that each experience or encounter with aliens is unique for that specific individual, in that everyone has his or her unique background and life experiences through which to perceive the events, and yet there will be pattern elements there that will be present.
Yes, I agree.
I think so, too. I strongly think so. Now, let's see here. Now, Corinna, you also have mentioned some other researchers. It sounds to me as though several researchers in British Columbia and elsewhere in Canada have verified sighting events at the time of your occurring at the time of your experiences through the reports of other witnesses, as mentioned earlier in the show.
Yes, that's correct. It was mostly people, of course, from up here in Canada, which were getting the phone calls or emails or mail regarding something that happened in Kelowna or Vancouver area. And then they would put it together because I had called them and said that this had happened to us. So people were actually confirming what we thought might have been a bad dream or we imagined it or whatever. They would confirm it and say, no, something really happened because we have eyewitnesses to this.
And confirmation is always a wonderful thing. And it sounds to me as though there has been substantial confirmation in the sightings by many. Now, Corinna, let me see here. There's one very interesting account there where you were so annoyed, so upset by what was occurring to your children during these encounters, that you were hoping to evoke perhaps the assistance or attention of benevolent beings. If I remember correctly, you used $1.5 million candlelight spotlight one evening to see if you couldn't evoke a response from this. You were attempting to communicate with benevolent beings in hopes they could stop the malevolent actions of the other entities. A friend was with you. She thought the idea was a great one, but she got nervous when she saw flashing there up in the sky and very apparent responses from non-natural or perhaps controlled objects.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's later than I.
Over the years, in the last few years, I've tried, many times and different things to try and connect with the benevolent ones to try and say, look, can you please help us, help me protect my children from these negative beings. And one of the ways was I would flash a light, and I would flash it three times and then stop and then flash three times again. And the next thing I know, they would be flashing back three huge flashes. Now, I'm not talking just a pin-like flash like a star. I'm talking huge, up-close thing. I'm surprised, that neighbors didn't see something. But one time, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just imagining this for one, because I wanted so bad to believe that the good ones were out there and that they would help my children and I. I asked a girlfriend over to come over. And I said to her, I want you to see something, but you tell me if you're seeing anything or not. Anyway, to make a long story short, this is what happened. They did flash back, and she was just terrified. She left and actually would never come over again. That was it.
Well, I could understand why such an event would be upsetting to that particular individual. Corinna, you actually, I don't think you realize that, but you actually were falling or... in some ways, conducting protocols similar to, I think, what is it CSETI does with the light lasers to evoke a response from the being. So it was very clever of you. And now here's a question coming in from Tal, another great question from our Wisconsin ICAR director. Corinna, have you had any futuristic-type dreams or visions in the last 6 months or so?
No, not in the last 6 months. I had a couple before, since my near-death experience, I've been able to tell, usually within 72 hours before an earthquake happens, I will be given this strange feeling that starts in the bottom of my feet and works up through my body. And depending on how hard the vibration is, I'm usually told how high on the Richter scale. And sometimes I'm told in what area it's going to happen. For example, the Japan quake and things like that. Those I had told friends and some of my family members about it and said, it's coming. It's within the next 48 hours. And I think it was the next afternoon that it came about. So I don't know. Is that what you were asking?
Well, that certainly seemed to be receiving some type of premonition about a future event, and Tal's indicating here, and I am yes, and thank you for that information.
You're welcome.
And Corinna, do you think, I don't want to sound alarmist here, but it sounds as though, of course, the current generation is one that are so adept to computers and the new scientific knowledge. You were mentioning a situation where a probe appeared in your home. Immediately, your son could explain it as an energetic ball of light. It was a probe, that the energetic ball of light was a type of alien probe. Do you think each new generation is going to be more adept at learning the facts of the alien environment and their technology?
Well, I hope so, because I don't think they're going to have much of a choice. I think that there's more and more ships being seen. They're getting bigger and bigger. They're getting there's more of them. It's all over the world, and it's all kinds of people seeing them. You have RCMP officers. You have doctors. You have radar people. Everybody's seeing them. They can't hide it anymore. And I think that's what, in a way, they're doing. They're trying to slowly get people accustomed to us seeing them. And the younger generations now that are coming, I pray to God that they have an open heart and mind, and that somehow they help us actually, figure out exactly where some of these are coming from and what they want. What's coming next? I mean, we know they're here, but what do they want? Who are they and why are they here? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
very well said there, Karina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's important, being open mind and heart.
Thank you. Pardon my interruption there. Karina, in your book, you do invite experiencers to share their information with fellow victims. You also invite the public community to become informed on this important issue. Now, you have created a local experiencer group, and how is that going? You do give excellent advice in your book regarding forming experiencer groups, and how is that project going?
Well, To bring you up to date, what actually happened, the one particular group that I was running quite a while ago ended up having to shut down. Unfortunately, we had a young man who joined the group and was not mentally fit, and the police had to get involved and stuff. So we did shut down the group at that time. A few years later, I decided to try another group, which was going fairly well. We had about 10 or 12 people at the time. Some of these people were actually from the United States and ended up moving back to their home country. And it left us with maybe 4 or 5 people, and then eventually it just dwindled down because these people that were left weren't actual abductees. They had seen many UFOs through their lifetimes. They had strange ghost-like experience, things like that. And at this time, just once in a while, I meet with 2 or 3 other people, which they claim they've seen things or experienced strong anomalies. So that's where that's at for now.
Well, it was a great initiative, and thanks for that update on that. Now, Karina, now, for example, you have referenced the fact that Rodney Mullen and his family were of great assistance. You do think that a strong belief in your Creator does help one through these experiences?
Oh, I think so. I think if it wasn't for my faith, I probably would have lost my mind by now. I don't think I could have made it, really. But I have to say that through people like Ronnie McMullen and his wife and stuff, I think that this gave me kind of the strength to want to keep doing what I'm doing at one point, because I thought, okay, this is it. There's only so far this is going to go. How can I help people on a bigger scale? How can, there was always something that, he said, just keep pursuing, keep doing what you're doing. You're helping people, don't give up and things like that. So that was a huge help. And Brian Vike from up north also was a great help. In the time that was actually in the hospital, this man, I can't remember his name for the life of me, but apparently he contacted my daughter via phone while I was in hospital, and he, in 2003, and he was actually like saying he was going to come over. He wanted to talk to my daughter, and Brian Vai got a wind of this, and he definitely protected us. He made sure that this man was never going to phone my daughter again or bother us again. So thank God that there are people like all of you out there who are helping us and who listen and you know, don't come out to judge us or ridicule us, because what we're going through is traumatic. So, you know, hopefully let's not make it more. So, you know, we do really need to have people who will listen and help us in some way.
Very well said, Karina. You know, Karina, I also noted in your book that you really appreciated the response from other researchers that you received, such as Whitley Strieber and Jeff Rentz. You know, at this time when the media doesn't seem willing to engage this issue and the government refuses to, I think the alternative media can be an effective forum to relay this information. Do you think that's the, well, would you agree with me? And also, given you said you really had quite a moving experience when you were interviewed by Whitley Strieber and also by Jeff Rentz. I think I'm probably paraphrasing here, sorry.
First of all, yes, I definitely agree with you on all counts. And second, yes, Whitley Strieber is an amazing person. He was very kind to me. He was very helpful. The first time that I spoke on his radio show with him when he interviewed me, it was so there were so many things that had happened to both of us with our children alike that we found ourselves both crying like crazy on this radio show. And it wasn't, believe me, it wasn't something planned. You know, it was just we were talking and all of a sudden our children came into it, and that was it. We both lost it. And we've had, you know, a very kind, very, very cool friendship ever since. And I will be grateful to him and Jeff Rentz for having me on this show. He was very kind and very helpful as well. Like I say, there, you know, people out there think that they're alone, but honestly, all they have to do is Google it or contact people like you or myself, and they're going to find that there's more and more people out there to help us. And they go anywhere from, you know, it will be a doctor, it will be a counselor, it will be a researcher, it can be a man of the faith, but they're out there. We just have to look for them and not be afraid to come forward, you know, with our stories, because I think it's like a giant puzzle. We all have a piece of that puzzle, and, you know, if we all come together and we all share our different experiences, we're going to be able to figure out this thing.
I think so, too. I definitely think that is feasible. You know, Karina, here I'm going to sort of bring up a pet peeve of mine. It's just a personal opinion I have that people are experiencers due to a possible number of factors. For example, there could be multi-generational research going on in the family, or the person might be employed in government or research and development facility or other major position. The person might have an unusual health problem or unusual health development. Or, of course, too, there's that factor. He might have been exploring into paranormal matters or portals, which he really didn't realize just where he was navigating. But it could be a mixture of factors. Or do you think not? Do you think it's just the multi-generational?
Well, I'm not sure. Like many of us, I think I have a few different views of what may be going on, what might be. But for the most part, for ourselves personally, I know that it's been going from generation to generation. I know that it starts at an early age. And even though I just turned 55, they're still around. They're still coming around.
Yes, and you know, I was going to say that really recalls to me some of Joe Montaldo's very interesting statements on the chronology of alien abductions and alien visitations throughout a person's life. And I must say, your account really does correspond there as well. Now, let me see. Karina, in retrospect, no, I want to ask that question. Well, it's the question of, do you wish this had never occurred to you and your family? I probably would give a strong yes. I wish it had.
Yeah,
I just try to cope with it.
Pretty strong.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, and just trying to adapt and do the research and just handle this just as well as I can. Sounds to me that you're definitely doing that in spades as a wonderful author and spokesperson for the field. Now let's see, Corinna, do you see in the near future a scenario where the media and the public community at large will become incrementally more enlightened about this phenomenon, or do you think it's going to be something that will be that will have to await the passage of a few generations?
No, I think that it's definitely happening already more and more, and I would say by 2017 for sure, 2015 and 2017, I don't know, it's a feeling like something big is coming up in 2015 and 2017. I'm not sure what, but I think one of those dates may have something to do with them. And when I say them, I mean Grays, I just mean simply ETs and UFO phenomena. So, I can't say any more than that, just that for some reason in my mind, 2015 and 2017 stand out.
That's very intriguing. Thank you. Corinna, do you have any plans to write a second book? This first one has been, I found it very informative. I'm sure you received a great deal of positive feedback from that. Could you tell me about reader comments that you received?
They've been quite positive. The people that have bought the book and read it have emailed me and said, you know, bravo for coming forward. Thank you for having the courage to come and let us know what's truly going on out there. If there's anything I can do, please let me know. We would love to help. It's been very, very positive. I was quite surprised. I thought that there would be more negative responses, but in actual fact, I would say, you know, 98% was definitely very positive.
Well, it's an excellent development, and, you know, here, I'm just as final questions. Even if I could mention the foreword here of the book by Ronnie McMullen, he does note, and I think it's a great comment, that this, I'm paraphrasing here again, or no, I'll quote him, first sentence of the book, I believe that this book will catch a few people off guard, end quote. Well, you know, that's really a great, that's a good summation. This certainly is a phenomenon and scenario that many people will find really shocking, but the events themselves have been traumatic, traumatizing to the experiencers.
Yes, definitely. But, you know, like I said, I think the more we come out and talk about our stories, the more I think that others, because I believe in my own heart of hearts, I believe that there are millions of people out there that have been contacted and are being contacted. And I would say, you know, half of those haven't even come forward yet because they're too scared of what people are going to think. There's certain things that have been mentioned in books and by other abductees and are interviewed. And, you know, it's a lot of it is we have similar things that have happened. But there's a few things that have happened with us which we haven't mentioned or mentioned to very few people. And I'm going to start talking about those kinds of things to see if other people are going through it or to maybe help someone who's gone through the same type of thing thinking, am I crazy or what's going on here? So more and more, I'm opening up a little bit to those kinds of experiences as well, some of the things that have come up. One of the things that came up was I woke up with severe pain in my head one day. There were things going on that didn't seem right. I went to emergency, and they did a spinal tap and took fluid out of my spine. The first thing the doctor said as he came back, he was scratching his head, and he said, you know, you don't have what we thought you might be experiencing here, but we did find something different or extra in your DNA or in your fluid, in your spinal fluid. And to this day, I wish at that time I had asked. I mean, I was in my early 20s, and I wasn't thinking about stuff like that at all. But in retrospect, I'm thinking, wow, it probably has something to do with that. Maybe other abductees have been told the same thing. Another thing was waking up with feeling like something was deep inside my nasal cavity. And, you know, doctors have found that there is an area deep in my sinus, which keeps, you know, it's like somebody's injuring in that area all the time. And it's created like a bit of a scar. And, you know, I would start blowing my nose, and there were people there in the house. So, I mean, they saw this. I showed it to them. I wasn't imagining it. But I would blow out these. Okay, I know this sounds weird, but for lack of a better word here, these long, thin, neon baby blue strings would come out of my nose. And the moment that they'd be out for a couple of seconds, they would just disintegrate. They would just evaporate like that right in front of your eyes in the Kleenex. I have no idea what those things are. I've never heard of anybody mentioning them, but these are some of the strangest things that have happened to us before.
Well, you know, I think it's very important to note them because they might prove very important in a database. Just as, for example, here at ICAR, excellent work has been done on the blunt type studies. Now there's a personality a study that is going on, and we're waiting. November Hansen's second book is, I'm sure, is going to be another excellent one. And the data collection and data analysis on these events is really so important.
Yes, I agree.
And now, Corinna, I wish so much that you'd be speaking again. Have you ever spoken at a conference or presentation? Perhaps Ronnie McMullen should organize another conference. In your book, you know you did have a conference back in Denver back in, what was it, 2006?
Yes, there was one done in Vancouver as well up here, which is a much larger city. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping to, you know, possibly come to the U.S. again, but go to a bigger conference and be able to touch more and more people. You know, I know this sounds kind of, I don't know what the right word to use is, but I think also that we need to have people in the media, like you said earlier, but like in the film industry, that are going to start taking this really seriously and maybe do a movie on a real story, not to the point where, you know, it's said they either make it worse than it is or they tell different things. I mean, really the true story of a family which has experienced real things. And to tell the truth about it, and, you know, not to forget about the fact that the military and the government are hiding things from us, and not to be afraid to show or tell some of the really horrific things that can happen to the children. I think people need to be aware of what truly is going on out there. This is not a Hollywood movie. This is something that's truly happening to millions of us out there, and they really need to speak the truth.
Very well said. You know, Corinna, that argument is a very powerful one you've just made. Well, Corinna, we've come now to the top of the hour. I want to thank you again for joining us this evening. The discussion was most appreciated. Again, thank you. Corinna, I'm very soon return guest, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening for Global Focus with guest Corinna Sables. I hope you found this discussion as informative as I have. Great weekend. Bye-bye.
Good night.
What he was talking about, the Cabazon.